There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bum in the Bloom, episode 47. Going to talk some early round passes. We're going to rephrase it, passes in draft season on the Bloom board, and some recent news, because there's some spicy recent news out there to talk about for your draft season that is fully upon us. Check out the podcast on Twitter at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am on Twitter at BD Intric, and my co-host is always on Twitter at Ryan BHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
It's all about rebranding, repackaging the topic. Some background about this. We were going to do our early round fades. Plan that out for this week, sometime last week. And then what I think is the best podcast out there. I keep wanting to call him Scott Erickson because it's Scott Jenstad.
And it's Jeff a combination Erickson. Of the two, yes.
They did a really, really good annual fade show this Monday, but I was like, they beat us to it. So we're rebranding it and going round by round with early round passes, guys that we're just kind of passing on. So I don't know. There's just so much content out there, and that's why we appreciate anybody who consistently listens to us. There is just a flood of content topics, and it's hard to differentiate. So
definitely is, and it's fades, passes, busts, whatever you want to call them. We all do them. I did bust.
Did a bust column at Potapalooza, right?
Potapalooza. That's why I'm laughing, going like half of these guys I've already talked about. So we'll have some fun with this one too. But it's a good topic. It'll definitely get some people. I'm not gonna say angry is the right word, but might get some people's attention. Let's put it that way, because I know there's a couple names I know people will get attention on that I want to talk about. So. Even my co-host here is not happy with my first round pick.
I've looked at some of your passes, and I just picked one of them in the first round. So,
And what he's referring to is his Tout Wars draft that we live streamed this past Tuesday that you guys should go check out. Actually, a lot of you already have, which has been awesome between the YouTube channel and just downloading it audio-wise. We really appreciate that. But it was fun, about 2.5 hours. It was Ryan, myself, and we were joined by the wonderful Ray Murphy at Ray HQ. To do some Tout Wars. After a couple days, Ryan, how are we feeling? Are we still good? Any second thoughts? Have you haven't even looked at it again.
Still recovering from the Aaron Civale snipe, both mentally and physically. You saw in the video, we played the clip. I kind of convulsed in my chair. So, it was a 21st round snipe. That was brutal, but no, fun draft. Like you always, I don't know. Have you done live? Well, you've done your tout my was tout. 1 minute.
Yeah. It was live, but most people were at work, so they wouldn't know.
Yeah, having breakfast.
Yeah.
You always have regrets in a 1 minute 15 teamer. Yeah. For me, going those, if I had to look back, taking 5 outfielders first 10 rounds, was not, I wouldn't say a mistake, it just hamstrung me later on. Also, know your draft room is another one. Like, this is my first and only Fantrax draft. And nothing against Fantrax. I'm just so used to NFBC and how to find guys. I remember searching for David Bednar. Couldn't find him. He was still on the board, but I was in hitters. And I just was lost in the middle of it. So, I don't know. I did fine, I think, despite all that. But
oh yeah, it's 15 team leagues and Tout Wars. You can make trades, like we talked about. It's different OBP, a lot of things. Not the usual NFBC formats or other roto formats that people play on other platforms, as discussed even on the live show. So go check it out if you guys want to. Really fun stuff. Good banter. Good people in the chat keeping us company. So always good. And I'll have an OC coming up in a few weeks. I've almost narrowed down my days. So we'll have some fun with that one. I have to coordinate with my co-host here to see if he can help on that one so I can get razzed a bit. Otherwise, I'll do it myself like I've done in the past.
But, no, I more than owe you. I think you've live streamed. I think labor was 3.5 hours. Tout was 2.5. So you've sat there for 6 hours of my drafts. The least I can do is, I don't know how long an OC takes. 2 hours.
I enjoy it. Yeah, OC's quick. In and out.
You were enjoying
I have seeing fun.
Me in pain and bagging my picks.
And Ray getting gifted the first 3 picks, at least. My goodness, he had an amazing start to his draft. So lots of fun stuff there. But yeah, go check that out. Let's talk some recent news before we get into our passes and a Bloom Board of the week. And we'll start with the big one, the one that dropped on Thursday. Carlos Rodon, forearm strain. But then I saw, I guess, Brian Hoke of beat reporter for the Yankees. They're referring to it more as the elbow. It's not, but the UCL is 100% intact. They're not worried about that, they said. There's a lot of what ifs out there right now. Best case scenario comments, like a lot of gray area, one would say. They're hoping for like a mid to late April situation, so maybe a 2 to 3 starts. That's best case scenario. So what are we thinking here, Bloom? Because, you know, we talk about it, you know, he takes time off. He's not going to throw for like 10 days. Then he had to ramp back up. The ramping up might have caused this to begin with. It's like a whole process of getting him right. And they spent a ton of money on him, and they already lost Frankie Montas. They can't afford to lose a guy for the year like Carlos Rodon. So how are you approaching this?
It's just really confusing. So, yes, the term best case scenario in April, that sounds terrible. There was an interview with Rodon himself today where he was like, oh, if this was late in the season, I would be pitching. I can pitch with it. It just hurts. And I don't know how long I could go. And then he further went on and said he had this exact injury last May. I don't know, you know, take it with a grain of salt, right? The player is probably always more optimistic. But if you are taking and if you have drafted Carlos Rodon already, maybe you cling to these positive words, is maybe this is just purely precautionary and they don't really care about Rodon being healthy in April. They just want to be super cautious, start him out in May, and there you go. The glass half empty is, this is a forearm. This is him being shut down, which is true. He's not throwing for 7 to 10 days. And we obviously know the injury history in Carlos Rodon. So it's rough, man. I do wonder, I mean, with all these injury guys, we kind of played this game last week. Like, I wonder how far, and we can play this ADP chicken, how far down would Rodon have to slip for you, Bubba, to take him? If he drops Rodon in 12-team NFBC drafts in March, has an ADP of 32.
Yeah.
If you drop like 100 picks, that would put you around Chris Sale. That's
Nestor
ironic.
Cortez, who's messed up too.
Nestor Cortez, Nick Lodolo, Jesus Luzardo. Would you take a shot then?
I wouldn't, just because that's my mindset. I get it though, because Chris Sale's got his things, but like, you have Lance Lynn there, who I know both of us kind of like.
Yeah.
You have the chance you could take on Lucas Giolito to bounce back. Oh man, that's tough. I could see the appeal, at least. I'll say that much. I could see the appeal. If you want to go for the boomer bust situation, I get it. If you're thinking, even if he comes back in May, it could be interesting. Yep. What about you?
I'd be tempted around like 150.
If I had a good already like 2 starting pitchers, I'd be willing to do that.
Yeah. The problem is around 150 are like Jeffrey Springs, Rasmussen, Charlie Morton. So maybe I wouldn't. Like, maybe he would. I mean, I would take those 3 guys over Rodon right now. So maybe I'm lying. Maybe it's more like 160, 170, which probably means I'm not going to get him.
Yeah, we're not going to get him because someone will take the chance before that. Someone will probably still take him in the top 100. Like, I can see that happening. So, and it's funny you mentioned May because I pulled up his game logs from last year because I remember he was having some velocity issues at some point in the season last year. And a May 15th start, he went 3 2/3, 10 hits, 8 runs, 3 Ks against the Cardinals. Got blown up. Worst start of the season by far. Then he went 6 innings, 2 runs, 6 Ks. Within 5 1/3, only 2 Ks. 5 innings, 6 Ks, 4 innings, 5 Ks. That was his May starts, or a couple Junes even. It took him until almost mid-June to get back to the consistent 5-plus, six, mainly 6-plus, six, and the strikeouts were back in mid-June. So he almost had like a month gap there where you could tell. I remember that very clearly because like he'd have shorter outings or his pitch count would get high quickly because he was having to utilize different pitches and stuff. And I was getting concerned about him. I don't know if we talked about it on this show or a different show I was doing, but I remember there was concerns in my mind watching him pitch because I'm obviously watching Giants games and he did not feel like that dude. Then he got it back and he pitched really well the rest of the year. He never mentioned that at all, ever. That's the first, when you said that was the first I heard because I didn't get to watch his interview. So that's why I went straight to the deal. I'm like, I remember something wrong early in the season and boom, 8 runs against the Cardinals in the middle of May.
That's right, because he did. He started kind of balls out in April, was yep. fantastic. And then I remember that May slowdown, everyone was like, all right, well, here's the injury risk coming up.
Yep.
And then he, I mean, so that's the case for Rodon still. Yep. Like, Carlos Rodon, the second half last season, after he says he had the same injury, was one of the best pitchers in baseball. So it's like, just, I don't know, it's really hard.
Like, man. I'll just do this. So from that June 12th on, basically a month gap from that bad start, 2.57 ERA, 2.73 xFIP, 20 starts, had 10 wins, 162 Ks in 119 innings, 28.6% K to walk. Those were elite numbers, like elite, elite numbers. So, yeah, I guess now all of a sudden we're starting to make a case for Carlos Rodon. It's like, hey, maybe if they baby step him, bring him back in the middle of May, you miss 4 or 5 starts. That was a 20-start span I'm pretty sure anyone would sign up for right now if I could write that down.
Yeah, the one thing that Rodon said himself that did give me some pause was he did mention, like, yes, I can pitch. I don't know how long I could go.
Yeah.
That does, like, so how long can he gut through it? Yes, he made it through last year. Can he do it again?
It's a tough. It's a big what if, and there's really no correct answer right now. So if anybody tells you they have it, they're full of it.
That's the only right answer is we don't know.
We're just trying to give you kind of the all the different angles
exactly.
to the situation.
Yeah, we're trying not to waver, just trying to give the pluses and minuses to the situation.
And I guess the one thing we can mention real quick with the Rodon situation, Montas already being out, Nestor Cortes is supposed to be potentially into a Grapefruit League game within a week, maybe this weekend even, if things go well. We have a rotation that's got Cole Severino, Domingo Germán, Clark Schmidt looks a lot better in that rotation now with this situation. And if for some reason Nestor Cortes isn't ready, that Debbie Garcia's velocity's up. Maybe he gets a little run to start the season. It's interesting, but I guess the biggest thing, and we talked about it on your Tout Wars draft, is Clark Schmidt looks to be anchored in right now, at least to start the season, which could be beneficial late in drafts, get a handful of starts, always drop them if necessary, but someone to keep on your radar.
Yep, just took Clark Schmidt in the 26th round of my TGFBI. So actually had his forecaster box and I ended the box with, he needs a stable rotation spot to be viable, but he's worth a stab to find out if it happens. And so it sounds like it's going to happen. Even like Domingo Germán, probably more of a streamer candidate, I think. But he, becomes interesting at least to start out when the Yankees are on the road.
All right, we'll stick in New York real quick. Harrison Bader, oblique injury, never good. That could put him back for a little bit here. How are you assessing that with New York?
I think I mentioned this on the Tout stream the other night, but Bader is like someone who, if you just look at the projections, the numbers pop. However, the forecaster, we gave him upside 20 homers, 30 steals. It's just the injury history. 2019, hamstring. 2021, forearm, rib. 2022, plantar fasciitis, now an oblique. Harrison Bader has never had more than 430 plate appearances in a major league season. Every projection system on Fangraphs, I believe HQ as well, because he is supposed to be the starter in New York, has Bader for over 500 plate appearances, on average about 550. Projection systems are projecting Bader to do something he's never really come close to. And so that's just something, it's kind of like a lesson. And who knows, maybe he'll be fine, but like another injury is probably going to come up with Bader is this kind of parlays into the Bloom board that we'll talk about a little later on, but don't just take a projection at face value, dig a little bit deeper, look at some of the context of these guys. And I already had Bader playing time wise down to like 400, 450. And it looks like that's probably what's going to happen. Injury waiting to happen. The one thing I'll add is it might be Oswaldo Cabrera time.
Yep.
In New York. I think Oswaldo Cabrera may have even mentioned him on last week's show, but anytime you've got a fourth outfielder behind Stanton, Judge, Harrison Bader, and Aaron Hicks, yeah, the dude's going to play. Yeah. So be looking at Oswaldo Cabrera's price tag in your
335 ADP. 335 ADP is pretty darn nice right now. Going around the likes of like Trent Grisham, who I know we talked about, but Randall Grichuk might not start the year. Marcell Ozuna, Dylan Carlson, those are other outfielders in that range. So guy that's got some power and speed. And the things you mentioned on Bader, it's a big reason I just kind of passed on him in drafts, is because I just don't know when he's going to play. It's just a thing he's done time in and time out. So already happening in spring, unfortunately. Yeah. Yuli Gurriel could be just a minor thing, like literally because it's a minor league contract, but he signs with the Marlins. Raisel Iglesias also had a minor league deal with the Marlins.
Jose Iglesias.
Sorry, not Raisel. Yeah, no, he's still pitching for the Braves. Don't you worry about that. The thing with Yuli I wanted to mention, I'm kind of surprised all he could get was a minor league deal when Mike Moustakas, who we'll talk about later, got a different deal. But Yuli going to Miami concerns.
I'm concerned. I have Garrett Cooper. Like, I'm a Garrett Cooper. We're both Garrett Cooper.
Yeah, we're hanging with Mr. Cooper. Like, literally, if I knew how to, like, actually Photoshop stuff, I would get the old 1990s TGIF picture and put his face on it. I just can't because I'm not that talented.
You can do it. I can teach you how. If anyone sees our graphic for the show, you can see tomorrow on Friday how crude my graphic skills are. But yeah, I don't know. It's concerning, but I don't think it, like you said, it's a minor league deal. I don't really know why the Marlins are doing it. Garrett Cooper, he should be the first baseman. Maybe this is just insurance, because I mean the downside of Garrett Cooper is the injury history. So maybe this is just some kind of insurance that in case Cooper goes down. But yeah, Yuli Gurriel, like, he was waiting and waiting, holding out for major league deal. It just never happened.
Yeah, pretty weird. Pretty weird in this era. He is older, though, so I guess that's a little fair, but makes sense in Miami with big Cuban culture. He got some fun there, too. Rockies, we just kind of mentioned it, Mike Moustakas coming back from the grave, basically. If this was like 6 years ago, I would have been more than excited for Moose in Colorado. Hate this right now. Brendan Rodgers' injury might have persuaded this a bit, then against the Rockies. So this is Rockies doing Rocky things, Bloom. Nothing good can come from this is the way I look at it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not convinced Moustakas is going to be like their everyday third. Like, I think it's got to be Elirius Montero. Be wrong. Like you said, Rockies are going to rock you. But even if Moustakas, like, I don't know if he's draftable. We looked on the touts draft. I think he's more of if he's even the third baseman, it's just a Coors Week streamer. And we actually pulled this up during the tout stream. The Rockies start on the road, I think, for their first two series, one of which is against the LA.
Yeah.
So, like, if you're drafting Mike Moustakas, you're not using him. You're probably that first weekend, you're probably not using him that second week. So what are you even using him for? He'll probably be hurt by the third week.
Yeah. So. If anything, if I can see the most Rockies thing happening here, he could platoon with CJ Cron at first base. I could so see them doing that to make everything miserable. Like, that, like, fits them to a T right there. Yeah. Something to think about as well, just to make you guys squirm some more. The other thing I wanted to mention, though, I saw Matt Heckman tweet this out earlier this afternoon. For you Nolan Jones fans out there, when he got traded over and you're wondering where he'd play, well, Bouchard, who was having a good spring, he now has an oblique injury. Grichuk might return to game action in a week or two. Nolan Jones might have a path to playing time to start the season. Just throwing that out there. Might not mean anything, but deeper leagues, you could have some fun there. Again, they start on the road, though, so who knows what we really want with Colorado.
Yep.
The Rangers, Bruce Bochy got his old buddy back, signs Will Smith. This was fun. My boy. It's always my boy when it's the Giants. This is a fun one because all Giants fans of media are like, oh, we remember when Bochy loved Will Smith as a closer. Now he's back, and we already were kind of wondering about the Rangers closing situation, Ryan. So how do we feel now?
You connect those dots, which I kind of get. I don't think this is the same Will Smith, the peak Will Smith that Bochy had. I think this is more like the Rangers bullpen needs some lefties. They've got like Brock Burke, which isn't doing too much. So like Will Smith, I think is more just that leverage guy against lefty batters. I'm still pretty confident despite the, I guess, minor neck injury that Leclerc's the guy. I don't know. Maybe situationally Will Smith picks up a couple saves if he returns that to that form, but I'm not even like speculating on Will Smith in the last rounds of drafts.
Oh, I'm not either. I'd rather speculate on a million other things. But speaking of another potential spec situation, if you're feeling really bored in a deep DC, when Daniel Bard got hurt, the Rockies signed Brad Hand, if you saw that one anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a total Rockies move as well. So I'm just throwing that out there to anybody that, you know, is, yeah. I wouldn't go there, but I wouldn't be shocked situation is what I'm saying. Justin Turner, if anybody has not seen it, don't look it up, but got hit in the face again. Good news is he was already out, said no broken bones, just needs the stitches to come out. He'll be back in action. Like, second time in his career he's already been hit in the face. It hit a lot of the protective stuff he wears beforehand, though, so that worked, apparently. It kept him from breaking his face. But he might not be ready for opening day because of that, because they have to wait for the stitches to come out and all that to heal properly. So it might be like a week or two late start. Not sure if that affects anything for you. I just wanted to bring it up to those that I love Justin Turner. I have a lot of shares of Justin Turner because of his price, but he might not be ready right out the gate.
As I pull up my Tout Wars roster and see if I have any backups for Justin Turner, who I took on Tuesday night. No, not really concerned. Just glad he's okay. Sounds like it's just timing thing of when everything heals up and stitches are out. So, I mean, if he misses a week, whatever, I still think he's a great buy. I think Justin Turner, if you're waiting on third base, is actually one of the best buys, who will probably DH most of the season, if not all the season in Boston. One interesting, like, my man, Bobby Dalbec is on fire this spring. And like, who knows, but if Justin Turner's out for a week and a half, maybe Bobby Dalbec comes in there, Casas, DH,
round 30 pick for a week.
You know, you're churning the end of that hitter roster anyway. Maybe Bobby Dalbec becomes a little bit more interesting if Justin Turner's out for over a week.
Yeah, that could be interesting because we've always held high hopes that one day it would happen for Bobby Dalbec, but man, wouldn't that be great if it actually happened? I am pulling up the Red Sox schedule real quick just because I'm curious who they play that first week. And it looks like we've got Thursday. What day of the week do we start? Oh, there it
Thursday.
Is. Opening 30th. Day, March 30th. So Baltimore, that's not a bad series. It's in Boston. We get Baltimore for three, then Pittsburgh and Boston for three, and then at Detroit's not the best. But to have Pittsburgh and Baltimore pitching in your first six games – that ain't bad, folks. That's a good little situation to have there for anybody in Boston if you can find some sneakiness in there. We might have to do that one of these later episodes, is kind of go over some schedule spots. That could be a fun one.
I was just going to say, like, that's a little bit of like a draft hack, your last few rounds. Look at those first few schedules.
That Boston one's pretty interesting right there, to say the least. Last piece of news I just kind of came over because I was checking out another article out there is, Leody Tavares is going to be out for at least 7 to 10 days before he starts doing baseball activities again with an oblique injury. A lot of oblique injuries. I wouldn't know what that's like because I don't know if I have an oblique. But he's out, and that kind of locks in Bubba Thompson as the starting center fielder for now until Leody's back, because that was kind of a back-and-forth situation. So, again, late-round steals-type guy for your early drafts, that's something to maybe look at.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance, because you'll feel protected no matter how the wind blows. Also, you can keep enjoying the home of your dreams. And our expert agents can help you save up to 23% when you bundle home with auto. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. American Family Insurance. Get a quote? Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
We have a Bubba. We'll have Bubba one stolen base run. Tweets, and that's all I want. That's all I want out of Twitter these days. So,
yeah, look forward Bubba to that. Can run. That's Vlad Sedler. You win again. All right, let's talk first six rounds. OCs, March, 17 drafts.
Yeah.
Passes. Who are we passing on? And I'm gonna just right out the gate say this: it's not always because we hate these guys, but A, we have to pick one each, so that's two in this round. These are 12-team leagues, so there's 12 options per round, obviously. And second, it's more probably a price thing. Like, if they fell, things would be different. So I'm going to specify that first. Do you have any caveats you want to throw out there before we get started to blow up some people's hopes and dreams?
No, that's basically it. Is yes, we are. I'm kind of holding our collective feet to the fire by having to pick 2 out of 12 in every round. Some of these rounds, like all these guys, are pretty good choice. Especially, I'm so used to 15-team leagues that once you go down to 12 and we force each other to pick one, and they obviously have to be different players, it's a little bit of a stretch. And so, like, I will mention this on a few guys. These are more just guys that I probably won't end up on my team, or they probably won't end up on my team. Doesn't mean I don't think they're bad. It's either just like a little bit the price, or I'm just interested in other positions categories at that point in the draft. I mean, the only bone I have to pick with this exercise is your first round pick, man, because that was my first round pick in Tout Wars. So let's kick things off. Tell me why my first round pick in Tout was not a good pick.
Well, again, almost every first round pick is good, so we're grasping at straws here. But I'm going with Mookie Betts, and a couple caveats here. He had 35 home runs last year. He has only hit over 30 home runs twice in his career, 2018 and 2016. He's probably more of a 25, 27 home run guy. Still not bad. Still not bad. Gonna say that. He should score over 100 runs, maybe. This Dodgers team's a little different than years past. Should still get there. I'll give you that. But he doesn't run anymore. 12 steals last year, 10 the previous 2 years, given 10 was in 2020 one time. But 16 the year before that. We haven't seen a 20 stolen base season since 2018 for Mookie Betts. Average just dropped down to 269 last year, 264 the year before. So the average has dropped a bit in recent years. You drafted him in an OBP league, though. Outstanding, Ryan. 340 OBP last year, 367. Kudos to you. But we're talking Roto, batting average. I think the power drops a bit, and he's not going to run. If he doesn't get the 100 runs, that was always the big thing with Mookie Betts. He'll score a ton of runs leading off for you. Just those slight concerns. Literally, we are grasping at straws in the first round. That's why Mookie Betts would make my pass list in round one. Not an easy choice, because I think I actually have a share or two of Mookie Betts. I'll be 100% honest with you there. But I will pass on – that was early in draft season, way, way early in draft season. I will pass on Mookie Betts right now.
All right. I have a bone to pick with not running. You mentioned the stolen base totals the last few years. He does run. He's not the 20, 30 stolen base guy that, you know, from Betts' peak, but I think we get 10 to 15. He's still like ultimately successful on the base pass. Stolen base success rate over 80% in 6 of the last 7 years. Yes, batting averaged in the 260s the last 2 years. K rate's been stable. I think that's more just BABIP. I really do. So, I don't know. Like you said, everyone's good in the first round. We're kind of picking at straws here, but I'm totally fine with Mookie, even in batting average league. Hitting the top of that lineup, which again isn't as deep as we're used to, but the top of that lineup is still pretty sweet. So
my question to you, just a what if situation. Why wouldn't you rather at that pick 11 take Freddie Freeman than Mookie Betts?
I think Mookie Betts, without squinting too hard, can get 5 to 10 more steals and a lot more runs. So I think 2 out of the 5 categories is Mookie, and one of which is steals. It's a good point, though. It really is, because Freddie Freeman,
I think, plus batting average of Freeman.
That's the thing. We did a podcast with the ITL boys after the tout stream, and I think it was Freddie Freeman and Bobby Witt, and I made the case for Freddie Freeman, where like Freddie Freeman's hitting 310, 320, and if you think Mookie's going to hit 270, yeah, that's a massive advantage. So I don't know. That's a good
my angle, because like you have Freeman, even Manny Machado versus Betts is interesting. Like, I'm not doing outfielder versus outfielder. I'm doing first round pick statistics. Like, that's where it's kind of like, again, nothing wrong with Mookie Betts. It's just if I'm trying to start my team off with, you know, 5 categories, the more I've looked at it, that's kind of where I'm starting to lean in the situation.
All right, makes sense.
All right, who's your first round pass?
My first round pass is Juan Soto. I just, from a 5x5 fantasy, Juan Soto and Tout Wars, again, OBP went 2nd overall Tuesday night, and that I can fully get on board with. This is always kind of a pet peeve of mine, where we talk about walk rate and why walk rate is so good. It is in real baseball. It is when you're talking like prospects and wanting to grow and have plate discipline. When you're talking about first round picks, you do not want somebody with a 20% walk rate like Juan Soto has had pretty much throughout his career in each of the last 3 seasons. That has a pretty, I don't want to say devastating, but it knocks down considerably the batting average upside that Juan Soto has. And I do think Juan Soto, from a batting average standpoint, rebounds considerably from last year's 242. I think he's more, HQ's projecting 287. I think that's probably on par. But if you're walking basically once a game, 1 out of every 5 plate appearances, that does very little for you, especially, and this is my second point, and really the biggest point against Juan Soto, he did not attempt a single stolen base with San Diego last year. Maybe that changes, but we have no evidence that that should or will change in 2023. And so you're taking a guy with potentially 0 steals, a batting average that might be good, but you're only getting like 450 at-bats, maybe 500 at-bats if he plays all season. It's just those 2 things combined for me, given the other options. Like Betts is going 2 picks later. Freddie Freeman's going 5 picks later. I would take both of those guys over Juan Soto in a heartbeat in batting average 5x5 leagues.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. I told you I almost picked Soto as well, but I figured Betts would be more fun for our discourse. And it's a great point that I think it's talked about more than it used to be, but not talked about enough still, is the fact he walks a lot. It's great for real-life baseball. It's phenomenal for real-life baseball. But for what we're trying to do here, it makes things complicated. Like, he's not, you basically said it all, but like, if you're walking, you're not driving in runs. You're not getting home runs. You're not adding your, like, so many statistics we're looking for, and it could all change. It really could. But the other concern I have, and I know I already kind of set up take Machado, there's so many, it's like the old basketball term, there's so many mouths to feed in San Diego. Not everyone's gonna drive in 100 runs. It's just impossible for that many guys to do it. There's a lot of really, really good quality bats there. Like, in a perfect world, Soto hits 1st or 2nd in that lineup. Like, with his OBP skills.
Yeah, perfect world, he's right behind
Tatis. And so that drowns out situations as well. And it just changes things quite a bit. So something to monitor with Juan Soto, of course. All right, your round two one should be a lot of fun here. Who you got?
All right, so this is more of my caveat, like nothing too much against Austin Riley. It's just I have not drafted him, and I've never really considered drafting Austin Riley. Couple reasons why. I mentioned the stolen base thing with Juan Soto. I think that applies for Austin Riley, who I believe has two career steals. I at least want someone who sometimes runs. I don't want someone who never runs. I think in this year's stolen base environment, I think guys who just flat out do not run are going to get dinged pretty hard, because I do think stolen bases are going to be up considerably, and taking a zero or a two, whatever, in stolen bases can kind of set you back. So there's that. It's just a point in the draft where I'm taking like Aaron Nola, Brandon Woodruff. I'm taking my first ace, so I'm just not really targeting Riley there. And then the third part, like I still, and maybe this is my bias, I could very well be wrong on this, I still don't buy the batting average with Austin Riley. I could see Austin Riley being a 250, 260 hitter, a career K rate of 26.5%. That's not very good. If you have a 260 hitter that doesn't steal, you need Austin Riley to hit like 40 home runs and drive in all, which he could.
Yeah,
which he could. You need that in order to return at least close to the price of this draft slot. So for those three reasons, again, great player, great lineup, great power, all the stuff. It's just someone who I haven't really considered in the second round.
Yeah, no, I have a couple shares, but I usually go Pete Alonso in this round if I need the power guy. Otherwise, yep. There's other options as well. So it's an interesting one.
And I think Alonso, the K rate so much better than Austin Riley. I think Alonso batting average-wise has 20, 30 points. Well, yep. Maybe not 30, but
at least 20.
Maybe 15, and 20 points.
And he'll run a little bit, too.
He had five bags last year.
Yeah, he'll run a little bit.
Yeah, so like... Yep, I thought about it. It's funny. I considered Devers for this. Devers and Riley are like pretty similar.
Devers was on my Potapalooza bus. Yes,
was he? Yep, that's right. He was. A lot of similar reasons why Riley. I trust the batting average a little more.
100%
with Devers,
but less power.
But and yeah,
worse lineup
power. So everything. I mean, I don't have any Devers either this year. Everything I basically said about Riley could probably apply to Devers as well.
Yeah, so it's just what makes third base so difficult. This is the best way I'll say it this year. It's the nicest way I'll say it.
Yeah, because the position like sucks.
It's just so bad. And that goes back to our ITL conversation. It's why Bobby Witt Jr., it's like, this is why he's going in the middle of the first round, because he's third base eligible. These other guys are just like, God, like, what are we doing here? And it's tricky. It's very tricky. My second round player is Michael Harris II. 19 home runs last year, over 20 bags last year. Great year. Rookie of the year, some would say. Should have been Mr. Strider. I don't get a vote. But played great, no doubt about it. A couple of concerns I have. You see, never hit for this type of power in the minor leagues. Obviously, things can change. He did steal bags. He hit for average in the minors. I'll give him all of that. That's great. But the power, it's brand new to me. And that's interesting. He also started there could be platoon situations if things go poorly. If things go poorly, I'll be very honest with you there. That's a big if with Michael Harris, but that has been proven. He's not the best versus left-handed side of things. And the other scenario I would put in play for Michael Harris is right now they haven't hit in fifth in that lineup. Ozzie Albies hitting sixth. There's a lot of moving parts in that lineup. If he somehow finds his way farther down that lineup, that's a problem, obviously. There's a lot of what-ifs with Michael Harris. And it goes hand in hand with my most rostered player in NFBC this year. I will take Randy Arozarena over Michael Harris 10 out of 10 times.
Of course.
So Michael Harris is just going way too high for my liking. He's not a 30-30 guy in my mind. Everybody says he is. That's why they're taking him there. If he's 30-30, take him in the first round. That's where you should be taking him. Take him over Mookie Betts if he's 30-30. But he's not. So no Michael Harris for me.
And that, I mean, so like the Arozarena point, I think is a really good one. And so I just pulled up my projections that I'm using a blend of HQ and the Bat X, and we've got Arozarena quite a bit higher than Michael Harris. So like, right, if you're, and this is why you don't have him, is if you're picking in this spot, you want an outfielder who steals bags, you're taking a Roserena. And so I get it. The platoon thing, like, I don't, Harris is such an elite defender. I really don't think, unless things go really bad at the plate, and I don't think it will, maybe he just like hits ninth, against lefties.
Yeah.
That said, if there is a week where he faces four lefties out of six games, yes, you're starting him, but you don't feel like great about it in a weekly league.
Do you still have your projections up by chance? I have a question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Compare Michael Harris to Cedric Mullins even for me.
Harris, so per 600 plate appearances, 272, 20 homers, 22 steals. Mullins, 262, so 10 fewer batting average, 17 homers, 3 fewer homers, and 28 steals, which is 6 more bags.
And he's round five.
Then Harris, and he's going, a round or two later.
25 picks later. So it's like little things like that. That's why it's one of my favorite things to do pre, like all the draft prep is like, don't take player A when you can take B and C. So then who am I taking at player A? Do I get my first pitcher? Do I go and maybe I like catchers, go get JTR or like stuff like that. Like, how do you build your roster differently? That's why I'll be fading Michael Harris the second.
The interesting thing you brought up with Harris too, is the power. Pretty wild to see a guy who in high A hit 7 home runs in 420 plate appearances.
Yeah.
In double A hit 5 home runs in 200 plate appearances and then went nuts in the majors. Now the Statcast numbers back up what Harris did in the majors. I will add that 10% barrel rate, hard hit rate, 45%. Like, it was there, but it's a good point that the track record of that power for Harris really has not been there. That's interesting.
Yep. Not been there at all. All right. Round three. Now it's time to really kick some people off. And I said this on my bus deal, and I've said it pretty much anytime we've talked about Sandy Alcantara, that I will have no shares of Sandy Alcantara this year. And yes, throw your tomatoes at me, whatever you prefer, but no Sandy man for me. Has he been great? He's been amazing. He won a Cy Young, just amazing stuff. He has to throw the innings, and he can. He's done it 2 years in a row. That's great. What if he throws 25 fewer innings? What if he throws 180 innings? He's not getting the strikeouts. And the 180, that's still a great mark. We're looking for guys to throw 180. That's awesome. But those guys strike a lot of dudes out. They play on teams that are going to win games. Like, they're still going to, like, do the ratio things, which Sandy should still be able to do, obviously, in that amount of time. But the other stats you need from a potential ace starting pitcher in fantasy, he will not have at that point in the draft. And I'm just going to keep it short and sweet right there. It's legit just, can he continue to put up 215, 220 innings year in and year out? All it takes is going, instead of going 7 innings, going 6 innings every start. That's all it takes. And it changes everything. So for that reason alone, and people think I'm crazy for it, I get it. It's no Sandy Alcantara for me.
So the only thing I'll add, and I don't have much Alcantara either this year, is his goal basically is to pitch 7-8 innings. Like, he is a unicorn.
He wants to finish games.
Yeah, he wants to finish. Yep, he wants to finish games. I personally think, from a stuff standpoint, you had your episode with Nick Pollock and like PLV. Alcantara probably could have like a 30% strikeout rate if he wanted to. I don't think he wants to.
He wants to be Greg Maddux.
He just wants to pitch to contact, get Ks when he can, but pitch to contact. He has so much movement. He throws so hard that I do think there is a good element of contact management there. And that is by design, I believe, for Alcantara. He's a horse. He wants to finish games. There's just not many like him. So, like, I do think he can go over 200 again, but I mean, you do have a great point that so much is just like, I mean, so much is health. If he misses
one IL stint,
starts, right? Like,
that's all it takes.
Then it doesn't look as good. It has to break right where he throws basically over 30 starts and goes on average 7 innings.
Honest question. The guy going right after him, it's an innings thing also. Would you rather gamble on Jacob DeGrom or Sandy Alcantara?
Sandy Alcantara.
Okay, because it's both an innings thing. That's all it is for both of them. Like, if you knew you were getting 150 yeah. DeGrom innings, you probably wouldn't be going right there, but just saying. So, yeah.
I'd take Alcantara. I have to say that because I infamously passed the Welsh man at our ITL podcast. I thought he was going to kill me when I said
he's hard up on DeGrom. Like, no wonder he's got pictures of him doing bullpens. There's probably a cease and desist, like a restraining order on the Welsh at Rangers camp right now.
The moment I thought he really was going to go through the screen at me is not when I said, not only did I pass on DeGrom in the fourth round of Labor's in IL League. He was like, what?
Yeah. Yep, it was even worse.
That was a fun conversation.
Fun episode.
Guys are great.
All right, who's your round three?
Someone who I thought I would absolutely be all over. One of your boys, or maybe former boys. I don't know. I've had the opportunity to draft Jazz Chisholm, and I just cannot. I cannot click that button in the third or fourth round. I know of anyone if anyone has 500 plate appearances, Jazz Chisholm would go 30-30. I think he would be one of the few guys in baseball that could do that. I just can't take a third round pick on someone who is coming off 200 at bats last year, has not played a full season in the majors. Is not only, and it's just the nature of the injuries too, the knee and the back. Like, those are two things that kind of freak me out. And so, like, I don't know. I love the talent. I love the player. I'd love to watch him play 160 games this year. Like, it would be awesome to do that. I can't get over it. I need to see him do it first. And so, like, yes, I miss out on guys sometimes by doing that. If I miss out on Jazz by doing that this year, I'm okay with it because there are good alternatives. It's just someone who I have not taken given the health history this early in the draft.
Yeah, it hurts because I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I've talked about it on other shows. Is I like Jazz a ton. People know that by now. Like, Jazz was my boy. And I kind of hope he goes 40-40 just to prove me wrong. So at least I can root for him and play him in DFS every day. Like, I'll do it. But I'm nervous at that point. Like, we've talked about it. We're both kind of risk averse until later in drafts. So it's tough to take a guy like that. You know, honestly, when I look at Jazz Chisholm, I still think he's better than the player I'm going to mention. But if I can take, say, an Andrés Giménez three or four rounds later at the middle infield, that's got a power speed guy that could go at worst 15-15, maybe those 20-20 out there, but get him so much later, I still feel better about my middle infield situation. And that's kind of it's not apples to apples, but it's still kind of fills your roster with the needs you're looking for type situation. Yeah,
I mean, Giménez is very much a light Jazz, but that's kind of what he's proven that he can stay healthy and play and last a full season. So.
Yeah, so that's why I threw his name out there. Is like, he's not going to be Jazz. Like, Jazz's ceiling is way higher. Not going to say that, but something interesting indeed. Your fourth round pick is the one I would have picked as well, and he just got shellacked on Wednesday night. So what do you got on this man?
Yeah, I won't spend too much time on this, but Dylan Cease is a pitcher who, back when we did our top 12 starting pitcher episode, maybe a month or two months ago now, I don't think he was even in my top 12, or either of ours, or maybe right at the bottom. I can't remember. I don't think he was in my top 12 at all. And so, obviously, given that, I'm not drafting Dylan Cease. So I just don't trust really two things is the walks, and not just the walks, but the cascading effects of walks, of not being able to go deeper into games, the anti-Sandy Alcantara. And then Dylan Cease from first half to second half last year had one of the sharpest declines. Granted, he was declining from a very high peak in the first half. I just don't like drafting pitchers this early who didn't finish the season strong like that. And those are the two main reasons for Cease, who is dropping, I will add. Like, I didn't really kind of realize this, but Cease is going behind Max Scherzer, Verlander, Woodruff, Nola, McClanahan, Rodon, I'll skip that, DeGrom, yeah. Alcantara, Strider. Like, Cease is the price isn't as expensive, maybe because everyone's dogging him this offseason, but the price doesn't seem like as crazy as before. But still, pitchers going after Cease: Julio Urias, Christian Javier, Shane Bieber, Zach Wheeler, Luis Castillo. I think I'd take all still of those guys all. Overseas.
Still take them all. Yep. All right, my round four guy is simple for me as well. Lubob, which we found out is really pronounced Luis Robert. That's how he said it in on the mic himself. But it's always going to be Lubov to me, and that's just who he is because I like my nicknames. So it's simple, and it goes a lot to what you said earlier. When you look at projections, he's played 56, 68, and 98 games. They all have him for 126 to 139 games. Never done in his career. Never. Not in the big league level. He hits for average, which is great, but he just doesn't stay healthy. That's just my biggest thing right out the gate. And I forget, I apologize for whoever tweeted it. It was a great point. It was earlier this week. Why take Lubob at an ADP of 45 when, say, 40 to 50 picks later, you can gamble on Byron Buxton? Buxton doesn't run. Buxton doesn't run like Lubob, but like it's just the similar injury concerns, basically, is what it comes down to. Both of them are so super injury risk. I just thought it was an interesting let's light Twitter on fire for the day tweet. And just for me, it's just 100% the injury with Lubob. You know, you got Schwarber, like Seth Mullins, who I like. I think Seth Mullins over Lubob. I take Adelis Garcia over Lubob. Like, just these guys going after him, I'd probably take Corbin Carroll over Lubob. So, just the kind of scenario we're in right there.
Just to give kind of people counterpoints and that sort of thing, as opposed to just agreeing with everything. I could argue the injuries last year for Robert were a little bit fluky, especially like the wrist that ended his season. Kind of a freak thing, diving into a base. It happens. The blurred vision that he had last year. I don't know. Maybe that. I've never had blurred vision. Well, no, I have.
I was about to say, wait a minute. I'm pretty sure you've been to a few Virginia Tech football games.
Just it does throw it out there. My blurred vision does recover like the next morning, afternoon. I don't know if Roberts would. I mean, you are like, this was a first rounder a year ago, and so yes, you are banking on the health. It's the ultimate risk reward play. It's the reason we're not taking, like, I'm not either. I'm just kind of giving the reasons for him. Could very much be a 30-30 guy if he stays healthy.
But. And it's what you said. I just wrote an article at Fantasy Pros, like five risk reward early draft picks, and he's the cover boy on it because I agree with what you said. Like, if he somehow stayed healthy, we've always hoped for 30-30 from this guy, like at least 20-20. Like, it's there, but he's
with a 290 batting average.
Yeah, that's a first round pick. It's just he's never stayed healthy. So,
agreed.
All right, my round five guy. This pains me because he used to be big on my list too. It's Ozzie Albies. I just the regret, like, obviously hurt all of last year, and he was showing great development year after year after year. Played all the time. I just don't know if the average will ever, like, we'll never see 295. That was a one time thing. So the average won't ever be great. Does the power bounce back? Because even before he got hurt, things looked just bad. Looked bad across the board for Ozzie Albies. Maybe he was playing hurt for a while. We just didn't know it. Who knows? I don't think we'll see that 106 RBIs again either. So you're hoping for the run scored. You're hoping for the power. Run scored probably won't be there either because he's hitting farther down the lineup. So it's just a combination of those things. He might give you the power, 260 average, give you a little bit of speed. Like, if you got 20-20, you'd be pumped. I don't even know if you'll get that this year. I just don't know where he's at. And I haven't seen much to be pumped on in spring training either. So I'm just out on Ozzie Albies right now, but could be wrong.
Couple things on Albies. I think, well, I don't know, but he is kind of like the last second baseman ADP wise, or if you miss on him and you want to get a decent second baseman, there's a pretty big drop off after him. So maybe that's a reason why he's going this early. And ultimately too, like, if you're playing the long game, Ozzie Albies is a guy who had a freak injury and was a second round pick last year. So who's to say, like, he can't just snap right back, no pun intended, to being that same guy, and you're taking a 2 to 3 round discount on it. I mean, that's the case for Albies where he's going. I have not landed on Albies. I do like a lot of the later second baseman. It's just second base for me has been a place where I have not fished early in the pool, probably because what I just said about Albies and why I listed Jazz Chisholm as a fade. There's not many other second basemen this early, so
it's rough. It's rough. Who's your round five?
Corey Seager. And Corey Seager is a fine player. It's more of like, I just haven't had a team where he has fit. Corey Seager stands out in a bad way at shortstop as one of the few, if not the only guy who really does not run at the position. So if you are taking Seager at shortstop, I think you do need to have already taken like a J-Ram, a Real Muto, a Varsho, someone who gets steals at a non-traditional stolen base position. Then I think it might work. I just haven't done a lot of that yet, so Seager hasn't really fit my team. Where, like, if Seager is your starting shortstop, you are missing out on quite a few bags compared to the alternatives, and you just need to make it up elsewhere. So it's more just like a fit. He's a guy that doesn't really fit at the position, and if you fall back in steals there, it can be hard to make up for it elsewhere.
Yep, I'm with you. I have him on a couple teams just because it fit, like you said, but in standard roto, it's tough. OBP leagues, still you want steals, but like points league, he's awesome. I'll say that much. Like, sure, you could definitely have fun with him in a points league. It's just, if you need those steals, Ryan makes a great point on that one. So I'll agree with him on that one, but a little counter, because I do have a couple shares, but it's 100% team dependent on that. Your round 6-1 was one of my busts on Podapalooza as well. So who do you have here?
I like, by the way, I set this up so that our round snake, even though there's only two of this, and so we just end up taking two guys in a row.
Yep, it's beautiful.
Smart. Adley Rutschman. I could basically copy-paste what I said about Juan Soto and put it here with Adley Rutschman. 100%. I was bummed to miss out on Adley Rutschman Tuesday night in Tout Wars in an OBP league. I'm not touching him in a batting average league. Again, the walks are so prevalent, at least they were in his rookie season, that kind of scares me. And I don't know, unlike Soto, I don't know what the power looks like in 2023. Like, long-term, it's probably fine. But Rutschman's power skills last season were, I mean, okay, but I don't know. Like, HQ were projecting Rutschman to hit 18 home runs over 500 at bats. That's a full, and 500 at bats given Rutschman's walk rate, that's a full season, and that's only 18 home runs. And so I just don't know if he's giving you enough. Like, give me Wilson Contreras, maybe even William. There, so just a slight
the right controller
there, but there's other catchers I like a little bit more than Rutschman, including the guy you're gonna fade next.
Yeah, my fade is Salvador Perez, and this is strictly a who's left at catcher situation. I feel like Salvi's still getting drafted as people are expecting the massive power guy, the 48 home run guy, or at least a 40 home run guy that hit 273. He's a 250 ish. Batting average guy, maybe 260, but he's a 20 to 25 home run guy now. He's getting older. They got MJ Melendez there to catch, play the outfield and DH. Like, there's a lot of moving parts there with Salvi. Now, he might get to be the full-time DH, which could help him play a lot. I'm not going to discount that at all. But his OBP skills are still downright horrific, so he has to put the ball in play. I just don't think the power is going to keep translating like it once did. He's going to be 33 years old. I'd rather take chances on so many other guys behind him at a much better ADP. At the catcher's position, it's tough to love Salvi. Like, he's fun for baseball, great smile, he's got the chiclets out there all the time, we get it, but he's not the guy we saw that one year that just popped off. Like, I'd take either Contreras brother, I'd love MJ Melendez, Sean Murphy, Tyler Stevenson. Like, the list goes on and on at catcher that I'd rather take over Salvador Perez at that ADP, where I could go and get, you know, Max Fried goes right before him, but, you know, got guys going after him, I could definitely have more appeal for. So it's just, I'm not paying a fifth round Salvi is what it comes down to. If he were to fall a bit, sure, that'd be cool. But you're drafting a catcher that gets you 20 to 25 home runs, and I listed a handful of guys that could get you. Like, William Contreras and Wilson Contreras should both get you 20. Tyler Stevenson, if he ever stayed healthy, sure. There's just a hand, like Cal Raleigh, we saw what he did. Like, there's a whole lot of guys down there that we could have some fun with that I'll pass on Salvi.
I'm a lot higher on him than you are, for sure. I think Salvi still has 30-35 homer power and 270 batting average personally. Could be wrong, but I think he's worth the premium over, definitely over Rutschman, but I do think he's worth the premium over the Contreras and a few others. Like, I do think the extra rounds that you're paying are fine. I'm not expecting the 48. Like, yeah, 2021 season is not there, but the contact, I think is there for him to go. Like, I think 254 is his floor batting average wise. And like I said, I think he's got 30 bombs in that. We'll see. Maybe we'll do a little side bet there.
Could be fun. Could be a lot of fun. All right. Do we want to do a Bloom Boards or go to listener questions? Like, I'll let you make the call here.
We can, I'll just real quick mention, and we'll add it to the show, but I did a board, and this kind of just goes to a larger point. We don't really need to talk about the names. I did a board where I looked at basically guys who had their career year in 2019. And the point of this was to, and I'm not sure which projection systems still account for 2019, but I kind of made this point with the Harrison Bader projection. Take these projection systems with a grain of salt, the numbers that you see. If you had someone who, like, for example, maybe I will list a couple names, Alex Bregman, who hit 296 with 41 home runs in 2019. Like, we all know the offensive environment in 2019 was unlike any other year. And so if you're still factoring that in to your player evaluation, just be a little bit skeptical for this list of guys that were very clearly having career years in 2019. Like, maybe it all just fell place and they did truly have a career year during the year that was a happy fun ball. But I think a lot of these guys, like especially the power, it's mostly because of the ball. George Springer, Gleyber Torres. Max Kepler
stands out in a big way.
Max Kepler had 36 homers. Josh Bell had 37 home runs. Career high was 27. Outside of that, Gleyber Torres, remember when he hit 38 home runs?
Yeah, he had like 12 of them against the Orioles.
He's never hit 25 in another season. So, like, it's just and I have Gleyber Torres on a couple teams.
I like
that. But I'm not, you know, I'm definitely not expecting anywhere near 38 home runs. So just be cognizant of that. And this is just an example of trying to use context in something that a projection system may or may not account for, similar to that Harrison Bader playing time projection comment I made at the top of the show. So
yeah, that's it. It's an interesting one. It's definitely it just sucks because we had the bouncy ball in 2019, the short season in 2020. It's like, man, how these projection systems don't have it easy. I'll tell you that much. It's
And that's not a slight to projection systems. That they got to put out a number with the information they have in the league context that is constantly changing around them. So
yeah, tough draw for them, to say the least. All right, let's do some listener questions before we head on out of here on a Thursday night. We'll start with our buddy Simon P. In light of the injuries to Rodon for the Yankees, Gonsolin for the Dodgers, Quintana for the Mets, who are some of the best five or six, like seven of the back-end guys we talk about a lot, pitching targets to stash for their teams? Like Texas, for example, lots of injury-prone pitchers who to stash. Well, I know both of us on the Mets like David Peterson. That's one right out the gate. That stands out in a big way. Are there any other pitchers that stand out to you? Like, we always say, like, eventually they're going to get their chance. So anybody for you?
Yeah, so I'm looking at, David Peterson and even Tyler McGill, because we already have a Mets rotation injury in Jose Quintana. Those are two guys. I would say my favorite pick for this is Braxton Garrett.
Yeah.
I think Braxton Garrett is the best sixth starter in baseball right now. And I make this point all the time. Six starters will get a shot at some point. Braxton Garrett is dirt cheap right now, and he's really good. Brought up the question of like the Texas rotation. Like, yes, from a role standpoint, that six starter is probably going to pitch more innings than Jacob DeGrom this year. That six starter, however, could be like Dane Dunning, who isn't very good. So you want to get someone who at least has the skills. And for me, it's Braxton Garrett.
Yeah, I'm going to pretty much agree with those. Like, there's always going to be a few more you could pick at with certain teams, but I'd watch the last couple weeks of spring here. I'd say that much. Like, you got your Mike Soroka's, if you can believe he can throw enough, he's going to get some run at some point this year.
Kyle Muller. I don't know if he's going to start in the rotation, but I think he'll get plenty of innings throughout
the year. Yeah, there's definitely a few, like some of these teams saying they're doing six-man rotations, just pick their sixth guy now, like the Padres, the Angels. You got some options there. Like, I don't know about, like, Nick Martinez and Seth Lugo on the Padres rotation just baffles me. I'll be 100% honest there. Obviously, Musgrove will be back in due time, but I don't know how you can go to battle and try to win a division with that.
Clark Schmidt. Yeah. It's a little too late now with the Rodon news, but that is someone 2 weeks ago. Like you're would have been really good. That's,
One guy I've actually started taking in deep DCs in with Anaheim is Tucker Davidson. He's out of options, lefty that's shown some signs of life from time to time. I think he'll get a little bit of run and could be fun. He's basically free in drafts. So another guy that stood out to me.
Let me throw out, where the hell is he? DVR and I actually drafted him in the XFL Keeper League. So there is that. But Gavin Stone for the Dodgers, I think it may not be until midseason. Yep. I think Gavin Stone's going to get a shot in LA at some point. So if there's someone you can stash, you have deeper benches. Basically anyone in LA you're kind of interested in. But Gavin Stone has the prospect stones.
Has the stones to do it.
Do it. Yep. Man, that was
good. That was good. That was on a T. Corey Johnson has a question. If you knew you were getting 150 innings by the end of the year from each of these pitchers, who are you taking? Hunter Green, Nick Lodolo, Dustin May.
Dustin May. I mean, the answer is Jacob DeGrom, but Dustin May. Like, I think Hunter Green's going to go 150 easy. Lodolo has some injury risk, but I'd go Dustin May. I think on a per inning basis, the best pitcher of the bunch, I think, is Hunter Green.
Yep.
But on a per inning basis, May's really good, and you get that added context of pitching with LA. So I'll go Dustin May at 150 innings over the two Reds.
That could be the right answer. Probably is. I'll take Hunter Green though, just to be a little different, just because I think we said it way back when. Like, which pitcher could you see being a top, you know, whatever pitcher by next season? He fits that bill. If you look at PLV, I know we don't keep going back there. He's like the poster child of that product. He just jumps off the page. Just that ballpark and then walks are his concern. Can he muster that situation?
Ray Murphy took Hunter Green 8th in Tout Wars on our stream and felt pretty good about it as his SP2, and I agree. So,
yep, I don't blame him one bit. Brant Chesser, former HQer, has a question. Do you all have a favorite hitter to roster between picks 100 and 200? I just went and sorted by util only. Do you have a favorite that stands out? Because there's going to be a few.
That sounds like me in the draft room trying to search for UT only David Bednar with 30 seconds left on the clock.
There's a handful of them.
I'll go Jonathan India. I'll keep it Reds based. I think Jonathan India, who I'm grabbing a lot of, has significant rebound potential for those reasons that we were talking about, why I'm not ending up with a lot of early second basemen on my team. Some of the reason for that is someone like Jonathan India is available much later. So I'll go India.
There's a lot of guys here because this is also a region where Ryan and I don't take a lot of pitchers. So we have a lot of hitters we like in this range. But I'll use the one that I took away from Ryan on the ITL show as well, as Rowdy Tellez. This is a guy, big boy things are happening for a big boy this season. Like, I think we're getting 40 for sure. This is one of the few guys I could hit 50, and you're getting them around pick 150, which is big. Batting average will be much better this year. There's just a lot to love about Rowdy besides just the jolly old spirit he brings to the field. So, yeah, give me Rowdy Tellez at pick 150 all day long. Even if it's a corner infielder, if you could take a first base early, I love him on our roster.
So the first base, just to kind of, in Brant's point, between 100 and 200, first baseman, Nathaniel Lowe, Rhys Hoskins, Christian Walker, Andrew Vaughn, CJ Crone, Rowdy Tellez, Anthony Rizzo, Jose Miranda, Ryan Mountcastle, Josh Bell, Ty France, Jay Cronenworth. That's a lot of pretty, I mean, you can qualm with certain names and like more than and some less. That's a lot. That's a deep first base pool in that 100 to 200 range. I'm getting a lot of those guys.
And basically also, if you don't take one by pick 200, good luck. That's good another takeaway from
good
that.
Good point.
And then I guess I'll ask the question because it was asked to us, but Jack Kitchen asks, is Rodon done for the year? I think we're going to say no for now. That's what I'm going to go with.
Don't know, but it doesn't sound like it, but we'll see.
I'm not staying at a Holiday Inn Express, but I'm going to say no. That's exactly. On this one. All right, Mr. Bloomfield, another episode in the books. That was fun. Our passes, the first six rounds of the recent OC or March OC ADP. And some interesting news, like literally got some right in the morning today. So any final thoughts as we wrap it up?
No, got first pitch online on Saturday. So if anyone's interested in checking that out, there's details on the HQ site. And I don't know, this weekend we'll be watching some WBC, watch some golf, watch some conference tournaments. Love this time of year. Honestly, my low-key, one of my favorite parts about the WBC is seeing like a major leaguer that I have not heard from in like 4 years playing for the Netherlands. Like Roger Bernardino was up the other night. Matt Harvey pitched to Johannes Speres.
Three shutout innings. Yeah.
It's just like I'm all for that, for these like obscure former major leaguers that are still just around. Robbie Cano hit a home run for the Dominican in an exhibition.
Don't you know? Yeah, it's a shame that they can't do this during a time of the year. It doesn't screw up spring training.
I know. It is a bummer. I don't know when they do it, though.
You can't. You have to do it after the season's over and guys are already don't want to be there. It just doesn't work. But, so, yeah, there's really no perfect time. That's the bad part about it. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. It'll be fun. I'm ready for the Players' Championship this week. And for us golf lovers, this is a fun one because all hell can break loose. It is a golf course that just gets the best of you. So I'll leave it at that. I won't bore you all with my golf commentary, but it's going to be fun. I got Barf Draft in San Francisco on Saturday.
Have fun, man.
That should be a blast. Yep. Looks like we're going to break in the rain potentially. It's like sprinkles and showers that day. Thank God. It's pouring right now. It's supposed to atmospheric river tonight and then tomorrow. So flooding coming again.
Damn thing.
So it'll be wild, but Saturday should be a blast in the city with the boys and the girls. Ms. D, Danielle Salinger, will be there to keep us in check. So that'll be fun as well. But we'll be back with you guys next week with some more Bubba in the Bloom. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am at BD Intrick. This was Bubba in the Bloom, episode 47. Catch y'all next time.
Sean Green here from the Sports Gambling Podcast on Blue Wire. And if you're listening to this right now, there's a good chance you've already been eliminated from your NFL Survivor Pool. Well, don't worry. We're here to help with our free Second Chance Survivor Pool. That's right. We're giving away $3,000 for free in our NFL Second Chance Survivor Pool. It starts this weekend. It's completely free. Just go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/survivor. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/survivor.